Let's now move on to our regular weekly catch-up with Money Week magazine. And I'm now joined on the line by Merin Somerset-Webb, who is the editor-in-chief of Money Week. So good afternoon, Merin.
Afternoon, Ed.
So what's on the cover of your magazine this week?
Well, this week the cover story is Billions from Boffins, How to Profit from University Spinout. So we've got a cartoon of a scientist on the front, bubbles all around, etc. And it's basically about how, you know, until about 10 years ago, the UK was absolutely useless at commercialising the discoveries from our wonderful universities. You know, we have in the UK some of the greatest universities in the world, Oxford, Cambridge, Imperial, UCL, etc., discovering all kinds of fascinating, interesting things which could have been commercialised in the UK, but have very often ended up being commercialised abroad. Now, about 10, 15 years ago, we finally began to get a grip on this, and we now have a variety of organizations in place that help universities help their scientists to bring their discoveries into some kind of commercial arena. So you have universities funding their scientists directly, looking for commercial opportunities, having funds that give them seed funding, etc., helping them to get through that first incredibly difficult bit where most ideas ended up either going abroad or turning into spin-offs that collapsed very quickly as a result of not having enough money. So that's a big change, and you're beginning to see it across, well, you've been seeing it for the last few years, across the university sector, these ideas coming out. But the thing that has remained a problem for the investor, i.e. for you and me, is looking at this stuff and knowing that we can't get access to it. So you get to this first bit, this spin out of a technology from a university, and then it's snapped up by private investors, or, you know, different kinds of private investors to the likes of you and me.
Right.
There isn't a fund that has helped small spin-offs turn into big commercial companies. And that's the interesting change that's happened, that's beginning to happen over the last few years. So the obvious one, and the one that's discussed all the time, is Patient Capital, which is Neil Woodford's fund, which was set up specifically to do this. You know, one of the things that he found very frustrating when he was a star fund manager over at Invesco, Perpetual, etc., was that, you know, he could only invest in big listed companies when he could see that the real money was probably down at very early stage companies where there's a huge demand for capital, a very small supply of capital, so the returns on that capital are potentially extremely high. So that was one of the things he said when he left Invesco 3 years ago. He wanted to invest in university spin-outs, and the result of that was the Woodford Patient Capital Trust. So we've looked at that a bit. We've looked at a couple of other funds that might suit. We've looked at a couple of smaller companies that have been spun out. But then we've also looked at another fund. This is on Max King's fund page. You know, we admire Max enormously, and he always writes about interesting funds for us. And he's written about a fund which used to be called Battle Against Cancer Investment Trust, BACID. And I wrote about it at the time as being a rather brilliant launch. It launched back in 2012. And at the time, it was a fund of funds that allocated its assets to a variety of different fund managers, mostly hedge fund managers, and had a nice little thing to it whereby there wasn't a management fee from the wider management company or for the funds it invested in. So this was interesting in itself, and we liked it at the time. But since then, in late last year, BACID has changed its course completely. It's merged with Syncona, which was an arm of the Wellcome Trust charity, specifically to commercialize cutting-edge medical research. So it's now investing $100 million a year or so in that kind of new research. So another way to get into these university spin-offs, to this very early stage research, is to invest in shares in Syncona, which is listed on the LSE. Max, for what it's worth, and I think it's worth a reasonable amount, prefers this over Patient Capital. He said, you know, Neil Woodford, while wonderful in lots of ways, has been a buyer of deals rather than an original investor in some of these companies, so his returns will not be as big. He also has many fewer people working in the sector.
And it's also
so
fair
Max
to
recommends this.
And it's also fair to say that it's very early days for Woodford's Trust, but the performance so far hasn't been that brilliant, has it?
Well, that's right. But, I mean, I don't particularly want to criticise for that on the basis that the whole point of a fund like this is that it's investing over a 10 or 15-year time frame.
I'm not being patient, am I?
You're not being patient at all. That's what makes, by the way, these funds superior in this sense to VCTs, because, you know, we have relied in the past on venture capital trusts investing in this kind of area. But, of course, they're looking for a return over 3 to 5 years, and a fund like this is saying, well, okay, actually this stuff takes a lot longer. It can take 10 to 15 years, and that's why we keep referring to patient capital as opposed to, you know, Ed Boucher capital.
Absolutely. Fair comment, Merin. What else have we got? Anything on Brexit this week, or have you left that alone?
Yeah, I see nothing on Brexit. I mean, we're generally of the view at this point that, you know, Brexit is an admin problem, so there's not much point in going on about it.
Okay, fair enough.
It'll sort of sort itself out. So we can leave that for a couple of years, you know.
Excellent. So what are you talking about then?
Well, we look, on the markets page, we look at you know, various markets, as we always do. One is Europe. There's several people writing this week that they think that the European market, it will be bouncing back, that people have, you know, perhaps before Brexit, people underestimated what might happen with political change in the Western world. And perhaps since Brexit and since the election of Donald Trump, they've been overestimating the impact of it. And now it rather looks like the European elections aren't going to be quite as disruptive and scary as people thought. So perhaps we're being a little bit overjudgmental about European equities. There's also a view that, you know, they're relatively cheap compared to elsewhere. You know, we've got down here them on US stocks on a PE of 18 times, European stocks on a PE of around 14.5 times. And, you know, is that gap acceptable? Now, I would rather wonder if maybe US equities aren't hideously overpriced as opposed to European equities hideously underpriced. But, you know, that's up for argument.
So you're suggesting, therefore, that European equities might be fairly priced then, maybe?
I'm suggesting that I am not 100% convinced that European equities are grossly underpriced.
Okay.
You know, you're not seeing that much growth there. Prices at PEs are roughly probably where they should be. Political risk does remain. The EU is still in danger. The euro is still in danger. You know, I wouldn't go thinking there's no political risk there. There is.
Okay.
There is.
I'm guessing you like Japan, though, still.
Oh, I always love Japan.
Good.
Always love Japan. I mean, Japan is genuinely cheap. You know, if you're looking for a cheap market, that's your one. It's also much more politically stable than anywhere else. You know, Abe is now going to be in office probably until 2021 or so. That's a long time of political stability. He's trusted. He's got high approval ratings. He's bringing in a variety of policies that do work. You know, immigration is easing up. It's getting a lot easier to get residency in Japan. The unemployment rate is very, very low. Inflation is picking up. And, you know, corporate governance we've talked about before here is improving hugely, finally. You know, we talked about Japan's corporate governance revolution. We've been talking about it for decades.
Sure.
But now it's finally happened. You're finally seeing buybacks. You're seeing higher dividend payments, etc. So it is finally happening. One thing that I saw today that isn't in the story, because I only saw it today, which worries me very slightly about Japan, which is just what skinflints the young in Japan are. And I've got a chart here in front of me showing that back in 1980, the average propensity to consume of the young in Japan, i.e. under 24, was 92%. Do you know how much they spend now? 64%.
Wow.
These people are frantic savers.
My word.
Which is not necessarily encouraging.
Okay, Mary, we've got time for one more story. You've just got a minute to tell me about one other story you really like this week.
Okay, the one thing I just wanted to mention was in our strategy page,
okay,
where John Stepek has been talking about the best way to value a stock, the most popular valuation measures. He's looked at PE, and he's pointed out that most of the time we look at forward PEs, price-to-earnings ratios based on what analysts are forecasting, but actually, much more effective are trailing PEs, looking backwards to seeing what the PE is based on earnings we already know about. So you should always look at a trailing PE rather than a forward PE. And on that, I would note that the US market is trading on an average trailing PE of 25 times, which is absurdly expensive.
Because, of course, the thing about forward price earnings ratios, you're comparing the share price and profits, and you're relying on the forecasts of analysts in the City or Wall Street or wherever, and they may not be right. You just don't know, do you?
They may not be right. In fact, they're always wrong.
All right. On that note, Merin, thanks very much. Good to chat to you as ever. Hope we can chat again next week. That was Merin Somerset-Webb, editor-in-chief of Money Week magazine. And if you want to read this week's magazine, you can buy it at WH Smith's or take out a subscription at the Money Week website.